and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker. Super Tuesday has come to an end. It's been a big night for both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. We are joined from San Francisco by Gloria LaRiva. She is the 2016 presidential candidate for the Party for Socialism and Liberation, also running for the Peace and Freedom nomination in the state of California with her running mate there, Dennis Banks, the former leader of the American Indian Movement, maybe current leader. And we are joined from Salt Lake City by Rocky Anderson. He was the 2012 presidential candidate for the Justice Party and served as mayor of Salt Lake City for two terms from 2000 to 2008. Welcome, Gloria and Rocky.
Great to be with you, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian, for the invitation.
Rocky Anderson, you were the mayor of a major city, Salt Lake City. You have been in politics for a long time. You were in the Democratic Party. You left the Democratic Party on the basis of principle. Now we see a very, very unusual election campaign unfolding, especially, I would say, within the Republican Party. No one would have imagined just 6 months ago, or maybe even 3 months ago, that Donald Trump would have the commanding lead that he does, that he is the presumed nominee, almost the front runner, certainly, of the Republican Party. And there is also on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders, an insurgency really representing the aspirations of the bulk of young voters, people who want change. He's been running against the Wall Street establishment. What did we learn from Super Tuesday today? Let's start with what your take is on the Trump victories. He's won a large number of the states.
Well, I think what we're learning is something is seriously wrong in this country when so many people can fall for this message of fear and hatred, bigotry. I mean, they voted for a man to be nominated as the Republican candidate for president, who makes fun of people who have physical disabilities, who calls for excluding Muslims from this nation, even perhaps shutting down mosques, a man who talks about having protesters at his rallies beaten up, who talks about violence with such glee about how we're going to be the greatest country again, and we're just going to smash everybody else. And it is so unbelievable to me. I mean, it's not surprising that there are individuals like Donald Trump, and who knows where he stands, because he's been all over the place on all sorts of major issues over the years. So he's nothing but a political opportunist. Nobody knows what he really believes, but to be saying the kinds of things that he is saying and being in the lead, I think that there are probably some diagnoses people could give to this country as a body that would raise real concern, and it ought to raise concern for all of us about the direction of our country right now.
Gloria LaRiva, you're running for the presidential as the presidential candidate for the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You are in California. There was a KKK rally in Anaheim. Three anti-Klan protesters from the Black and Latino community were stabbed. The police put them in jail. I think they're still in jail. The Klan was let go. There was another stabbing in Huntington, California, just today by people were approached because they were speaking Arabic. They're Arab Americans. One of them was a police officer from Illinois, but they were speaking Arabic, and some of the people approached them and said, "Hey, Obama bomb," and started taunting them and ended up stabbing them. There is, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, a rising tide of white supremacist and fascist organizations that are mobilizing that call Donald Trump their glorious leader. I mean, this is really an amazing phenomenon where you have Trump, who refused for a good 24, maybe 48 hours to disavow the support of the KKK for his campaign and was quoting Benito Mussolini. Talk about what the impact on the country is when you have somebody like this as the front runner and the presumed nominee for the Republican Party.
It's quite serious because in just the last few days, as you're saying, the violence is growing, the power that some of these fascist organizations feel that they now have to carry out violence, advocate violence, organize online, and feel that they're going to get support. And the fact that they call him such a hero is incredible. But I think what's even worse is how the media has lapped up everything that Trump has demanded, whether it's the wall of expulsion of all undocumented workers or keeping Muslims out. His call for the Muslims to be expelled received a 75% support in the last Republican primary, and that was only because CNN and other media kept touting that over and over. And if he had gotten no media coverage about that, people wouldn't have been saying 75% leaving the exit polls, that that's what they support. This is the media helping, and I think now the media is saying today, they're saying, well, what do we do now with the possibility of Trump to be not only the nominee but the president? And that's where I think we in the progressive movement, the people who are rejecting this racist violence and extreme reaction, not just of Trump but also Cruz, Rubio, have to say, what are we going to do as the days tick by in the future primaries, which will be March 15th? There has to be this idea of mobilizing, organizing to reject this extreme reaction.
Rocky, I want to ask you the same thing that Gloria started talking about, which is the role of the media. I was really interested to see that on CNN the other day at the 6 o'clock news hour, Trump was going on one of his rants, and they kept it live for about 45 minutes. And that's like, he didn't have to pay for that media time. This was CNN. And they had one calculation, and the calculation was ratings. And, you know, the CBS chief executive, Les Moomes, called Trump, quote, and I'm quoting, damn good for business. In other words, he said, he's driving our ratings up. We're going to stay on Trump all the time because it's good for business. These are corporations, they are selling a commodity. They have big corporate advertisers. This is good for business. So for their own narrow reasons, they're pushing Trump no matter how far he goes in terms of whipping up racism and hatred and xenophobia. Talk about that, because you've been there too. You've watched the media. Talk about their role.
Well, it is all about ratings for them, but it's very short-sighted thinking, because this is a guy who's talking about being able to sue, make it easier to sue journalists. I mean, this guy has everybody in his sights, and it doesn't seem to bother many people in the short term if they think they can make a buck on him. And imagine, I mean, we saw just the opposite thing happen with Bernie Sanders, especially for the first several months of this race, when the mainstream media were doing nothing to get out the fact that Bernie Sanders was running, what his platform was, what his history has been, his total authenticity as a candidate and a human being. And look how he's caught on at the grassroots level, the millions of people who have sent in contributions. In fact, I came home tonight, and I was so upset about what's happening. I got online, and I suggest everybody listening to this do the same. Get online and send Bernie Sanders a contribution, because it speaks so loudly that millions of people put their money where their mouths are. And, you know, Hillary Clinton laps it up with all of the Wall Street firms, and she was one of the highest recipients ever from the healthcare and insurance industries. We're not going to see with either of these candidates any real positive change, and the downsides are utterly disastrous with, I think, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And there's got to be a different way, but there never will be. And having been a candidate who traveled this country in 2012, I gave a year of my life. I put a lot of money into it. But and certainly I didn't expect to be winning. We weren't even on the ballot in the majority of the states. But to get the message out, to try to start, I mean, we talked about movement building like Bernie Sanders is talking about. And when you talk about the progressive movement, it's got to be everybody coming together, all people of goodwill and reason coming together to reject the xenophobic bigotry and hatred and appeals to people's fears and the worst side of people that we've seen with the Trump campaign, and also to rein in Hillary Clinton when it comes to her carrying the water for the Wall Street firms, and I hate to say it, but just like her husband did. I mean, if it hadn't been for his repeal of Glass-Steagall, if it hadn't been for his his signing into law, the bill that basically deregulated the trading in derivatives, we probably wouldn't have seen the economic disaster that many people are still reeling from, and the cost of many people their jobs, their homes, a huge part of the pensions in this country, some 40% lost value in pensions. What makes anybody think that we're not going to see the same thing from Hillary Clinton, who on these domestic issues was a real cheerleader? I mean, she talked about the Trans-Pacific Partnership being the gold standard until Bernie Sanders became her opponent for the nomination. Then all of a sudden, she did another one of her political tricks and flip-flopped on that issue. But look at what she has done. Internationally, how this woman, after voting for the Iraq war and helping make the case for the lies perpetrated on this country, perpetrated on the people of Iraq and now throughout the Middle East, and then thinking that she and the president have the power to just decide to go bomb Libya and overthrow their government and then go do the same thing in Syria, claiming that they had the power, the executive branch alone, to engage in acts of war, which is absolutely contrary, not only to the War Power Clause, but contrary to anything that the founders had in mind when we decided we're going to get out from underneath the dictatorship of one person, and we're going to leave the decision solely, the decision as to whether we should go to war, solely with the Congress.
Gloria LaRiva and Rocky Anderson are our two guests. Rocky Anderson was the mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah, between 2000 and 2008. He ran for president as an independent candidate on the Justice Party in 2012. And by Gloria LaRiva, she is the presidential nominee for the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and also running to be the nominee for the Peace and Freedom Party, an electoral socialist electoral party that has ballot status in the state of California. Gloria, same question. I want to stay with this subject before we go to break. Rocky talked about the way the media was also corralling support for Hillary Clinton, just as they're giving Donald Trump all of this media time. And even when Sanders is winning, like tonight, after the primary results came in and he won Vermont, and the people were enthusiastic, cheering, yelling. They listened to his message. He said, this isn't just about becoming president. This is about building a movement for social and economic change. They were so excited. And the press report was, well, there's not a mood of doom and gloom here in the Vermont headquarters of Bernie Sanders, as if there should be when he had just won. In other words, every time Sanders wins, it's considered to be just a rare anomaly by the media, and they keep spinning it and trying to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, it's a free press. All of the corporate-owned press are not being dictated to by the state. How do they follow the same code, the same signals, where they all unite, in this case, for Hillary Clinton, and trying to sort of spin Bernie Sanders off the stage?
Well, it's part of the idea that you have to have an electable candidate. It's what has created the phenomenon of the hundreds and hundreds of superdelegates, more than 740 in the Democrat Party, on the idea that you have to have all these elected officials who automatically have a vote, regardless of the popular vote, to assure that their stability is continued.
But just let me interrupt you for a quick second and ask you to address this before we go to break. Sanders seems to be electable. In other words, outside of the superdelegates, when the polls show he goes head to head against Trump, for instance, he beats Trump. I mean, he is electable. That's why I want you to answer, if you could, why is the media so against Bernie Sanders?
Because he's challenging things that have been ignored for 30 years, the idea of people having economic justice and some improvement in their lives and taking on the super, super rich on the idea of taxation. But I want to say the media has done a great deal. They circle in very closely on the image of Hillary Clinton. And like you were saying, that they poo-poo the thousands who come to hear Bernie Sanders. She doesn't have large audiences. They've been staged university events in the South, very, very organized. But she doesn't have the enthusiasm of Bernie Sanders. And I would like to make a comment on something that Rocky said, where he said, you know, I hate to, you know, blame Hillary Clinton for something that Bill Clinton did. But in fact, in 1996, for his second term, she was out there campaigning daily and is quoted on the video, you can see it, where she actually called youth of color, especially black youth, super predators who had to be healed, in advocating for this super criminal, this crime omnibus bill that locked up hundreds of thousands more people than would have been. And that's part of the media's role in hiding her history. They don't talk about that. They tout her as someone who's liked in the black community, who has done things for the black community before the Southern, before the Super Tuesday. And there's also the issue of war that Rocky was talking about, that it's not just Trump saying going after Muslims. The Muslim communities of Yemen, of the Middle East, of Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, they've all been under the gun with this outrageous war and occupation by the U.S. And the political discourse of both parties has advocated dictating to the world for the last 25 years in a very blatant way. It's why people have become, a large part of the population has become accustomed to the idea that you dictate with bombs, that you dictate with brutal racism and attacking Muslim people. So Trump has had this medium that was perfect for him to then espouse these ideas that are outrageous, but it's been created for him, the groundwork.
Okay, we're going to have to take a short break, and we will be right back. We're joined by Rocky Anderson and Gloria Larriva. We'll be back in just a moment.
Loud and clear. Loud and clear.
We are back. I'm Brian Becker. We're joined by Rocky Anderson. He was the mayor of Salt Lake City from 2000 to 2008, a truth teller. He was in the Democratic Party, left the Democratic Party, and ran as an independent for president on the Justice Party in 2012. And by Gloria Larriva, she is the candidate of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in 2016. Rocky Anderson, you were a Democrat for a long time, and you've been on our show before. People actually, after you spoke, we got so much response because they were so inspired to hear you talk about your own observations, your own insights, your own experience in the political establishment and why you left the Democratic Party. But let's go back to what Gloria Larriva was just talking about, the role of the Clintons in helping to move the country to the right, or the Clinton administration. Yes. Hillary Clinton was the first lady, not an official, although probably a close advisor. And as Gloria mentioned, we have the videotape where she was out campaigning, calling young black people super predators as part of that sort of demonizing effort that led in many ways to the phenomena of mass incarceration or the expansion of it. But there are many other elements of what actually happened inside the Democratic Party that sort of exorcised liberalism and progressivism during that period. You were there. Talk about it.
When the Democrats are in the minority, it seems like they find their courage. They will be the opposition party if there's a Republican president. But as soon as they take the majority, or if there's a Democratic party or Democratic president, it seems that they lose all will. It seems that they lose any of the, those core beliefs and commitments, and they do anything to just stay in power. One obvious example was during the Bush years, after the illegal war and the disclosures about torture and all the rest, and the fact that we've been lied to about surveillance. John Conyers, when the Democrats were in the minority in the House, he was holding mock hearings for impeachment. And then the Democrats won a majority. He was the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And all of a sudden, there was nothing. No talk about the hearings. I mean, Nancy Pelosi said impeachment is off the table. Since when is impeachment off the table? When a president lies to Congress and the American people and sends our nation into war that turns out to be such a disaster and then violates both domestic and international laws in such egregious ways. But I must say, though, that John Conyers, I worked with him for months. He finally held a one-day, almost a full-day hearing on abuses of power and illegal conduct by the Bush administration, so it would at least be on the record. But there wasn't there people in Congress, it seemed, were so afraid on the Democratic side to be talking about these issues once they were in the majority. So we see the same things in terms of domestic policy. When I decided, okay, I've had enough. I used to say I've put my proud Democrat. I had a coffee cup that said proud Democrat, and I said I put it in storage for now. I took it in small steps, and finally I said I've had enough. Without this party's support, we wouldn't have gone into Iraq, which is the greatest. Certainly one of the greatest foreign policy disasters our nation has ever engaged in, and we're still paying an enormous price. Our country and its people are so far less safe than we were before that invasion and occupation of a nation that posed not only no danger to us, but even according to Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice before 9/11, didn't even pose a danger to its neighbors. But look on the domestic side. There's been no accountability on Wall Street during the Obama administration for the crimes that were committed that caused so much tragedy for so many people in this country. It wasn't just a matter of some financial inconvenience. It was people losing their jobs and their homes and their pensions. And people are still struggling. And look at students now, given what's happened with education. And non-dischargeability in bankruptcy student loans. And the Democrats have been part and parcel of this kind of destruction of our public educational system, especially at the higher levels, the capacity that almost everybody had to get a higher education in the past years. It's out of reach for almost everybody anymore, unless they're going to incur enormous student debt. And we still don't hear any. I mean, Hillary Clinton will never talk about breaking up the banks that are too large to fail. What does that mean? It means that these financial institutions, who are now concentrated in only a few hands, few billionaires' hands, they are able to engage in the most reckless speculation with all these tremendous upsides, and if they happen to screw up like they did before, then they know they're going to be taken care of again because they are too large to fail, meaning if we allow them to fail and don't bail them out, then there are going to be horrific consequences for our economy. And that's what Bernie Sanders is such an important part of his message. Break them up and don't allow them to concentrate that kind of financial power ever again, because if you don't take those steps, and if the Democratic Party can't find courage to do that, we're going to have another economic meltdown, and it could be worse than it was just a few years ago. Now, where are the Democrats when it comes to cleaning up the campaign finance system? You know, Barack Obama said, I'm not going to take money from lobbyists. I'm not going to take money from PACs. He turned around and raked in millions and millions of dollars and was the largest recipient ever of Wall Street money. And so you wonder, well, let's see, why aren't these people being prosecuted? Their investments in these candidates are really good investments. They pay off very, very well. So Democratic Party's been part and parcel of both domestically bringing this country to the economic brink, and in terms of foreign policy, you really can't distinguish between the Republicans and the Democrats because they both go around the world in the most imperialist manner, trying to impose our will. I mean, it was Hillary Clinton that said it's time that Americans see that Iraq can be good for business. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
And when Gloria mentioned a while ago Hillary Clinton talking about young men of color being predators or super predators or whatever it was, and I haven't seen that direct quote, but I heard tonight that she was confronted by somebody about that and at some kind of campaign function, and once they got that person out of the room, she looked at the others and says, now let's talk about some issues that really matter.
I would like to say something about that, too, now that you mention it, that this young woman, Ashley Williams, part of the Justice for Black Youth movement, she's really a sign of what has been taking place for the last 5 years, and we shouldn't lose sight of the movements that have arisen, Occupy, Black Lives Matter, Fight for 15, and it's really this grassroots kind of struggle that's going to keep growing because these elections, which looks like it'll be Clinton and Trump, and on the Republican side, certainly similar to Trump if it's not Trump, it is a sign that they are more and more divorced from the vast majority of people who need this economic and social justice and peace that you have been talking about, Rocky. And that the more that they see that their needs are not served, the fact that these parties are diametrically opposed to our interests, people are going to start, are going to continue fighting back. I think her disruption, which was got some blips of coverage. She got on some morning talk shows and everything. But there has to be more of this. There has to be people feeling that they're not being heard, disrupting these elections and saying no more business as usual. The faith that people are losing in the establishment, in the Democrats and Republicans. And I feel for decades we've been treated like a ping pong ball, being bounced across a table back and forth where people say, okay, we've tried Democrat, now let's try Republican. We've heard for the last 30 years in times when the Democrats had the presidency, they would complain that they didn't have or one house or the other house majority. But from 93 to 95, Clinton had the majority House and Senate Democrat. And he was a Democrat president. But what took place then was this failure of the Democrats to take action, the same way that Obama refused to take action for the people, you know, meeting this change, this demand for change that he promised, and had the House and Senate Democrat majority. Both presidents did. They failed to act on their promises. And then the Republicans swept in. When the Republicans won many seats in 1994 midterm elections, then Clinton began to tail the Republicans. He had vetoed Newt Gingrich's contract on America, actually it was called Contract with America, these massive cuts in entitlements. But as soon as he vetoed them, the very next year, Clinton began to adopt the same programs and signed them on as his own law, the crime omnibus bill, the welfare reform, which was such a crime against poor people. He tightened immigration, actually, on permanent residents, not just undocumented workers, but permanent residents, on and on and on and on the list. So I think the Democrats have try to mimic the Republicans in the last 30 years, but they're a poor copy sometimes, and that's why you see, I think, someone like Trump being able to gain the way he has because he's just out there more blatantly. And then if we see Clinton becoming president, there may be some sort of veneer of a false liberalism, but we're going to still have to fight the policies that she will certainly be pushing.
And I really hand it to Gloria, because people who are willing to get in the ring and discuss these issues, knowing that you're not going to win office, but you can make a huge difference in the long term by being out there as a candidate, by continuing this dialogue. And Brian, I appreciate certainly what you do, because it's such an important means of getting the word out for people to hear these things and understand that there is a huge spectrum of reasonable, legitimate, workable ideas out there, and we can't just keep telling ourselves it can't be done. You know, Hillary Clinton's trying to use against Bernie Sanders the idea that, well, his ideas are nice, but he'd never get them through. Can you imagine if somebody had just said that about FDR? A lot of people said it about FDR and Social Security, but it didn't stop him. He went out and sold it to the American people, and he got it done. And that's what we need, is that kind of leadership, rather than this cowardly resignation like we saw from Obama with the single-payer health care. He wouldn't even put it on the table, because for him, it was a given that the healthcare industry and insurance industry were going to basically write the legislation, and they had to be taken care of if we were going to get any changes in our healthcare system. And that simply wasn't the case. The majority of doctors in this country, and I think the majority of people in this country, were behind single-payer healthcare, at least people who understood how it worked so well in many other countries that are paying half per capita what we are for their health care and getting better results. That's what people don't understand here, is we have one of the highest infant mortality and one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the developed world. We're 50th out of 50 countries when it comes to maternal mortality. That means a woman dying in connection with pregnancy or childbirth. Do you ever hear any of these Republicans or Democrats talking about that? About I don't hear Hillary Clinton talking about the gross disparity in income and wealth in this country. It's unprecedented.
So she's actually saying that now in the last few weeks about poor people, yeah, and economic justice. But then at the very same way, because she has to agree with Sanders on some things, then she says Sanders' program is unworkable. And she mocks his program for health care for all.
Yeah, I was going to say that. We didn't hear it from her until Bernie Sanders got in the ring, but we know how inauthentic she is. She's never made that a cause. Bernie Sanders has made it a cause, I think, the entire time we've been facing these problems. But how, you know, Gore Vidal called us the United States of Amnesia, and I think he's absolutely right. How quickly people can forget. Why is it that people have forgotten all the lies of Hillary Clinton? How have they forgotten? You know, New York Times said this is a person who really does her homework. Well, she voted for the Iraq War without bothering to walk down to a secured room in the United States Capitol and read the National Intelligence Estimate, which put the lie to what this country and Congress were being told by the Bush administration, and which later was simply repeated by Hillary Clinton to justify her heinous vote for war against Iraq.
Gloria LaRiva, we're going to take a break in 45 seconds. Did you want to jump in?
Well, I just would like to see if in the next segment we could talk about how do we see the near future, even before November's election, in terms of the phenomenon of all those millions who are supporting Sanders and who do not want to support Clinton and probably won't. What can happen with some sort of a movement, even if Sanders hands over his support to Clinton if she were to win the nomination? I think that is an important challenge that we have to try to encourage and foster.
Well, we can do just that when we come back after a short break. We're with Rocky Anderson and Gloria LaRiva talking about Super Tuesday primaries after a short break. We'll be right back.
Loud and clear. Loud and clear.
We are back. I'm Brian Becker. We are with Rocky Anderson, formerly the mayor of Salt Lake City, ran for Justice Party presidential candidate in 2012, and with Gloria LaRiva. She's running for the 2016 presidential election on the ticket of the Party for Socialism and Liberation and seeking the nomination of the Peace and Freedom Party in California, along with American Indian Movement leader Dennis Banks. We're talking about how the Democrats have evolved, how things have gone to the right, the lack of accountability, as Rocky Anderson said, the amnesia about Clinton's past crimes, really, in terms of foreign policy, the bombing of Libya, the celebration of the lynching of a head of state. That was Muammar Gaddafi on October 20th, 2011. She said, "We came, we saw, he died." She was very happy, giddy. I mean, today, a big part of Libya is under the control of the so-called Islamic State. No accountability there either. And the media, and we're also talking about the media, and I want to just mention this, that the Hillary Clinton is being projected as the major winner of the primaries on Super Tuesday. But, you know, Bernie Sanders won Vermont. He won Oklahoma. He won Minnesota. He won Colorado. It's very tight in Massachusetts. She won seven states. He's won four. That's not a landslide. But again, the media seems to be, as it has from the beginning, writing off Bernie Sanders as just a fringe candidate, even though hundreds of thousands of people have attended one or another Bernie Sanders rally. Millions of people have sent in small donations. I mean, it's been an amazing campaign, not because of Sanders per se, the person, but I believe this yearning for change. We saw it in the Occupy movement in 2011. We saw it in the Black Lives Matter movement. We know people are suffering. People want change. They're trying to find avenues for it. Gloria, you asked to talk in this segment about what happens if Sanders tells his supporters, and he's not giving up yet by any means. He says he's in it till the convention. But if at the convention he says, okay, we have to all come together and support Hillary Clinton, what about all of these, again, hundreds of thousands of mainly young people who want real change, and it's not going to come through the Democratic Party?
Well, I think first, in terms of Bernie Sanders, he has done a remarkable job in making a point that millions of people have donated at very small amounts and has refused to take super PAC money. That's one element of the elections that I think people are strongly rejecting who are supporting him. But they're all, I think the people who are supporting him, the vast majority, are not just liking him because he's clever or because he's militant or because he says things about the healthcare. It's because he's really fighting and being very militant about this idea of let's say the banks or healthcare or student debt. And I think that people are also thinking very carefully. I was reading some of the comments in the New York Times on this revealing two-part story of Hillary Clinton's criminal role in the war on Libya. In fact, they show how she was trying to actually take credit more than Obama for having destroyed that country. And then it became problematic when all these terrorist, you know, factions were fighting each other. And in the comment section, there were comments of some, like one person who said, "This, I am so sickened to see this. You can be sure I will never vote for her, even if she becomes the nominee. I'm voting for Sanders, but I won't even vote. I'm so disgusted." And I think there is going to be a lot of rejection of her because people do not buy the media image that has been portrayed of her. People know her history. They know Clinton's history. And I think that if she is a nominee, many people may hold their nose and vote for her, who were Sanders supporters, but they're not going to stop fighting afterwards. I think the people who supported Obama, a good number of them, became active afterwards. Let's remember the Occupy. I remember one demonstration of 5,000 when Occupy first happened after the people took over that park in New York City. We had 5,000 people here. Everyone I asked had never been to a protest before, and we're going to see more protests. If Trump were to become president, and we have to be prepared for that possibility, we are going to have to be in the streets you know, election night and even beforehand, if it looks that way, just fighting. And I think a lot of people will be ready to be there with us, all the activists together.
Rocky Anderson, can you envision a Trump presidency? And Gloria says, you know, this could be a huge catalyst for nationwide resistance. We saw there was a massive anti-war movement. Millions of people came out during 2002, 2003, trying to stop Bush's war before it started. Do you think that's possible?
It's going to be worse than that. We've never had a truly fascist president before. And the things that he is talking about, they constitute fascism. He's the most xenophobic. He talks with such glee about brutality toward others. If he wants to beat up people at his campaign rallies that are protesting, imagine what he would do if you had people out in the streets. We've got to do everything we can now to make certain that man isn't president of the United States. And at the same time, though, it's going to be really hard to check off a ballot. Of course, I'm in Utah, so it doesn't really matter, given the Electoral College, how I vote for president. But I just think we've got to do everything we can to make sure that Trump is... He's a weird footnote in our nation's history, because imagine how he could turn the tide, especially with the kind of support he's got in this country right now from people who are either, or I'd say it could be all of the above, but bigots, xenophobes, people who are driven by so much fear, all the negatives. I mean, this is what the man, he knows that this is how he's going to garner the kind of support that he needs. And he's done it. He's written about how to get media to cover you, how to be outrageous and to be out there doing these kind. And he's just putting it, he's like Goebbels in a way. He's written the plan. We can all read it. And he's out there executing it. And it's just appalling that people in this country have so little discrimination, apparently, that so many people do, that they would go for his total hypocrisy and playing people the way he is. So I don't want to end this on just a bad note. There are also great opportunities for movement building, for addressing the kinds of things that nobody was talking about. Until the Occupy movement, nobody was talking about the 1%. Nobody was talking commonly where candidates have to be talking about the economic and income disparity. The way that even now we're hearing from Trump, there are certain things he's talking about that are just appalling to Republicans, like his contempt for the trade agreements that Obama and Clinton and the Republicans have been trying to force on the American people, and that Bill Clinton was successful in forcing on the American people and wiping out so many millions of jobs in this country.
Well, I'd like to go back to a time in 2006 when the Sensenbrenner bill by that Congress person who was pushing through legislation that would have made every undocumented person in the United States a felon just by being in the United States, and was a very, very dangerous, really fascistic kind of legislation. And as it's virtually to pass, we saw millions of people who had no rights, who are subject to deportation, you know, hundreds of thousands in towns like Dallas, and places were never expected, the largest demonstrations ever in U.S. history, millions in L.A. We were part of those demonstrations. And that was a call through radio, through Spanish radio. And I dare say that if Trump were, we can't say it won't happen, you can't say it's not going to happen, but if it were to happen, I can see the people of this country, including those who have no voice in elections, 11 million undocumented workers, mostly from Mexico, and 17 million adults of voting age who are permanent residents who have no right to vote either. There are people who've lived here for years. My mother's been here more than 63 years. She's never had a right to vote. She's Mexican. She's a permanent resident. We're talking 28 million people from other countries who have power, and they showed it on May Day 2006. We've got to create a movement unheard of that unites everybody who sees the danger of people like Trump or even Hillary Clinton, who may have a veneer of some so-called liberalism, but she's quite dangerous for the working people and the people of the world.
Let me say what I think, and I want to ask about this situation, and I want to ask both of you to comment about it. It seems to me that Trump and the Trump campaign, which took the Republican Party establishment by surprise, they didn't want Trump. They didn't think he would gain a lot of support or he would be a flash in the pan, but he has gained a lot of support. Now it looks like he will be the nominee. The Republican Party establishment was paralyzed. They had all of these internal contradictions. They couldn't reunite around another candidate, or there wasn't another candidate who was attractive enough. And Trump was getting all of this media. And that has signified the beginning of a real resurgence of white supremacist and fascist organizations. The Southern Poverty Law Center said they've grown by, I think, 20% within the last year. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, I believe if Trump wins, those movements are going to feel very emboldened and very encouraged, and they will start to organize and mobilize openly in the name of white racism and white supremacy, which has been more or less in the closet, sort of a taboo since the victories of the civil rights movement. And if Trump loses the election, and Clinton wins, I believe the right-wing fascist movement will also gain strength, because they will just think, hey, we made a lot of progress, unexpected progress with our glorious leader, Donald Trump. But Clinton is like a big punching bag, has high negatives, and has been the target of right-wing attacks for a long time. Her campaign, like Obama's, White House, like Obama's White House, would be, again, a magnet for right-wing mobilizing. I feel that we're entering a new stage in the progressive movement. The people on the left have to take into account the fact that the political situation has profoundly changed in the country, whether Trump wins or doesn't win, given this unexpected development. Rocky Anderson, what do you think about my idea there?
I think you're right. I think that they feel emboldened. They see that a guy that's saying the things that Trump can say is the leading Republican candidate. I think that we're in for some very dangerous times, and we all need to be as vigilant as we can, and we can't let down. We've got to keep that movement growing that Bernie Sanders is talking about and so many of us have been talking about for years. But it can't be done through mouse click activism. It's not going to be done by getting on your computer and putting your name on a few petitions and calling it a day. It's going to take organizing, getting to know others in our community, building communities around these issues, taking to the streets and getting people, the right people elected at all levels of government, but not stopping with elections, continuing to push at all times. Because even if we get the people that we consider the right people elected, they need our support and they need to be pushed by us. We have a tremendous power in this country at the grassroots to make change happen. We saw it with the civil rights movement. We saw it with the women getting the vote. We've seen it with the early environmental movement. People coming together, the labor movement, huge changes coming from people who they may not have won office, like Teddy Roosevelt when he ran as a Progressive Party candidate. The kinds of things he was talking about in terms especially labor reform almost all were ultimately implemented because they captured the public's attention and people were sold on them. They could envision those kinds of things happening. So we just all need to be a part of it. Nobody can leave it for somebody else. We can all find our role in whatever way in continuing this movement and remaining vigilant against those dark forces of fascism and racism that are growing in this country.
Gloria LaRiva, it seems to me that, and we only have about 2.5 minutes left, so I want to frame this quickly if I could and get your response. Donald Trump in the past was a Democrat, not a right winger, not a Republican. He supported a woman's right to choose. He supported gay marriage. He's not religious. Says he never had to ask God's forgiveness because he's so wonderful, meaning he would have presumably turned off right wing evangelicals who make a big part of the Republican base. In spite of the fact that he has all of these not conservative positions, he's getting all of the support from the right wing. And it seems to me that his message really is, hey, we white people have lost this country because of Latinos or Muslims or black people. We white people are suffering right now. And the reason is our country has been taken over by other people and we have to take it back in order to be, quote, great again. In other words, the open embrace of white supremacist messaging, which used to be done just through dog whistling in the last few years, you know, when Reagan said welfare queens, everybody knew that that meant black women who were poor and who had children were the targets. But this is an open call for white supremacy. That seems to me to be the real signature of Donald Trump.
Oh, yes, it definitely is. But I still have hopes, and I agree with you what you're saying, that it's a historical change that's taken place that's reflected in these elections. Trump is like many other candidates who are chameleons, and we saw parts of that with Bill Clinton. Let's not forget that, how he adopted this language about the welfare queen, that very racist term, or when he bragged in 1995 that we've seen the end of big government. But I do believe that the progressive thinking people, liberal-minded people, are still the vast majority. We only have to see this handful of Klan in Anaheim and hundreds of people that came out the next day to reject it. I do think we have some setbacks ahead of us, possibly. We're still waiting for a possibly reaction decision on women's right to abortion in the Supreme Court. Women are definitely under attack, and I don't see Clinton defending women strongly, but the struggle is not over. We may suffer setbacks, but we do have to have the persistence and getting in the streets that Rocky just mentioned. We have to keep fighting and keep pushing that perspective that we make the wealth, it should belong to the people, and we have to keep fighting any semblance of bigotry and racism.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, I'm not a pessimist. I'm a historical optimist about the situation. But I do believe that there is going to be and is, as a consequence of Trump, not only a political destabilization of sorts of establishment politics, but a rising tide of a very ultra-right movement that the progressive movement has to fight back against. And it won't be one if it's just following Hillary Clinton because she's not Donald Trump. I think if we do that, then we end up in the same sort of what I think you said, Gloria, the ping pong match where we're always the tail to somebody else's kite. And as Rocky said, it's time for people to be in the streets, do whatever they can do to make a difference. And if everybody does that, we in fact can make a difference. We are out of time. I want to thank Rocky Anderson. He was the mayor of Salt Lake City from 2000 to 2008. He ran as the presidential nominee for the Justice Party in 2012. And by Gloria LaRiva, she is the 2016 presidential candidate for the Party for Socialism and Liberation. We will be back tomorrow. Be sure to go to our Facebook page, Loud and Clear with Brian Becker, for daily updates. If you enjoy the show and want your friends to hear it, let us know by liking the page on Facebook. Remember, telling the truth is important, but to make a difference, it has to be loud and clear. We are out of here.
Loud and Clear.